Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The remedy that he laid out, which I think he could do, would be to enjoin the individual state actors from distributing the amount of money authorized by Proposition 123 until such time that they replenish what they took out before.
We completely disagree with these findings, and we don't believe that one federal judge should undo the will of Arizona voters and frankly, all of its institutions.
I mean, this is technology that's changing right before our eyes. The message today is Arizona's open for business. We're welcoming this technology. We're not pushing it out of our state.
Well, I think this was very much her own decision. The regents really have great respect for her and the organization that she's brought to the system. They would love for her to stay as long as possible, but they're, you know, completely supportive also if she wants to go and pursue new opportunities.
And joining us to talk about a judge's ruling that could affect Arizona school funding and the stopping of Uber autonomous vehicles being tested in the state are former business executive and former congressional candidate Christine Jones and former legislative leader Chad Campbell, senior vice president at Strategies 360. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Christine, let's start off with this ruling on Proposition 123. This was Governor Ducey's creative approach to getting more funding for schools without raising taxes. So how much of a flux does this potentially put this in? Obviously, there's more to be done. There's more to be seen whether the judge is going to ask for money back or whatnot, which would seem contrary to funding education. But just from a general standpoint, how dangerous could this be?
Well, let me say at the outset that Judge Wake was a partner at my former law firm. Okay. So, and I know the gentleman. He's a great judge. He's a judge who actually judges. So I think this was a ruling that was kind of inevitable. There will be some form of delay. It doesn't necessarily mean that the entire thing is dead on arrival, but this notion that you have to have prior congressional approval to take money or redesignate it from the state land trust should have been figured out ahead of time. It wasn't. The judge correctly ruled that that was a foible. As we now know, two members of our congressional delegation went, you know, sort of ex post facto tried to apply a congressional approval to it. There are several things that could happen. Even if Judge Wake says, no, that doesn't work because it happened after, it could still be appealed. It could still be reformed. And, you know, perhaps Chad, who I think might have been in the legislature when this was first invented as a lawsuit, could speak to the parties there. But at a minimum, it delays the funding and the settlement, which is critically important for the education funding in Arizona.
Chad, jump off that, but also another point to be made on this. Are we in a position where, I mean, obviously that vote ended up being a lot closer than a lot of people expected initially.
Yeah.
It only won by about a point and a half or so. And because there was some concern about the state trust land, I think, and I wonder if that was something that you thought was brought up enough at the time, depending on how things were feeling.
You know, if you remember, Jeff DeWitt, when he was treasurer, was probably the most outspoken critic of this concept. It had bipartisan support for the most part of the legislature, actually. And, you know, I don't want to get in the minds of the voters, but I think part of it was that concern with the degradation of the trust fund. And I also think part of it, though, was the fact that many people saw it as kind of a gimmicky way to fund education as opposed to actually funding education with a comprehensive long-term plan. So, you know, that, I think, was probably the problems with the voter ballot measure. But going to the current situation, I mean, putting aside the politics for a minute, if this does hold, and it remains to be seen if this holds, I think there are some compelling cases. If you look at New Mexico, they've done similar things there, and they're not in trouble there. So I think there is some compelling cases that this won't stand. But if it does, you're talking about a loss of hundreds of millions of dollars on top of an education system that I think most people in the state generally believe is already underfunded. So it's compounding the problem, and it's a serious problem for Governor Ducey if this does stand.
Right. So what position does that put us in? Like, if this doesn't stand, if Prop 123's money is not there, and then we have teachers rallying already, what kind of political position does that put the governor in?
Well, I think he's in his weakest position he's been in since he got elected. I've been saying this for the past week or so. If you would ask me 2 months ago that Doug Ducey could be beaten in the general election, I would have said, no way. Today, I think he could be beaten. I'm not saying he will be, but he could be. And so if I'm on the ninth floor and I'm his staff, I'm figuring out ways to fund education and pay teachers right now. That is my focus for the next 2 weeks before session ends.
Yeah, and politically, I don't necessarily disagree with Chad, although I think he may be a slight bit too optimistic about how a Democrat could perform on a statewide basis. But this, let's remember, was a settlement of a lawsuit that had been pending for a long time. And if that settlement blows up and they have to go back to the drawing board, the teachers now are in a critically more strategic position of strength than they were when this was settled 3 years ago. So I think as Chad rightly points out, they got to figure out how to get this thing to the finish line. And if Prop 123 money goes away, they're going to have to end up paying more in that settlement, I think.
Yeah, Chad, Christine's point about how long a suit this was going. I mean, this is one of the reasons I think that Governor Ducey got so much credit at the time, even if people didn't think it was a flawless plan. It's the idea that this has been dragging out and he was trying something unique.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I mean, I give Governor Ducey some credit for trying a few different things and coming up with this when he was state treasurer. I mean, this is before he was governor. Like, I give him credit there. I think those are some creative and innovative ways. But I do think, regardless of whether or not this funding, this 123 funding stays or goes, it's still not enough, I think, in most people's minds at this point. And we're seeing this very organic, and it is organic. People can claim otherwise, but it is very organic movement by the teachers, you know, arguing for teacher pay increases, which they need. And, you know, we're nowhere near the level of our neighboring states. And so, I mean, I'm not saying a Democrat's going to win, to Christine's point. It's very tough. But, again, 2 months ago, I would have said, no way, a Democrat a chance. Today, I think Governor Ducey could be beaten if things don't change in the next month or so. And he can change it if he wants to, so we'll see what he ends up doing.
Well, so what would that look like, though? So you've got teachers saying extending Prop 301 is not enough, but then Ducey today said, I'm not bragging that we're 43rd place in teacher pay in the country. We're not last. I mean, he's saying he's not going to raise taxes or consider any sort of cut to corporate taxes. What are the options?
Interestingly, for a Republican, and particularly one who ran on the notion that he will never raise taxes and, in fact, will reduce taxes every year he's in office, he's faced with the notion that it might be politically expedient for him actually to go back to 301, maybe refer the initiative that increases 301 by 0.9 cents to bring it to 1.5. This was something that they wanted to wait 2 years to do. That may be back on the table now, and that may actually be the fastest, best strategy, because then you can push the decision to the voters. And if the voters say, yeah, we want another $1 billion in education, then that becomes their decision, and he can sort of wash his hands of it.
Go ahead.
I would just add, here's the thing I would add, though. I mean, first of all, that I'm not bragging, but we're 43rd line. Whoever's doing this PR, they need to work on that. That line was one of the single worst things I've heard from a politician in Arizona in quite some time. And this goes back to the state of the state last year. This is when this all started for Doug Ducey, to be honest with you. When he came out of the gates in 2017, promising all these great things for education, including teacher pay raises, and then gave them that 1% pay raise, that was the beginning of this problem. And I keep telling people, this has been brewing for over a year now. It's just finally hit its head. It's a nightmare of his own making in some ways. But to Christine's point, I mean, it may have to go to the ballot. You may have to do it that way. But if Oklahoma can raise revenues to give teachers a 10% pay raise, Oklahoma did it, then Arizona, which is a much less red state, needs to do it. And honestly, just from a purely political perspective, putting aside my partisan hat or my being an Arizonan, from a political perspective, if Doug Ducey doesn't do something, I don't know where he's getting his advice from. He needs to do something in some capacity.
Well, so, Christine, what are your thoughts on why it happened? So even if Chad said it was brewing, we understand that. But things can brew and then not really lead to anything. The fact that we're actually hearing the possibility that Arizona teachers might strike, was it West Virginia or was it the fact that, okay, we are taking into account, wait a second, the really 1% raise really isn't very much. Prop 301, we have to fight to even get it renewed. Is it all of those things together or is it what's happening in other states?
It's both and. Okay. And this is sort of the culmination of the critical mass coming together. He also set an expectation gap. So when you get up and you say in your State of the State speech, I'm going to give a teacher raise, and then you come back with 1% or 5% over 5 years or whatever the thing is, that is a significant disappointment to people who were looking forward to a raise. You always want to set the expectation lower and deliver higher. That didn't happen. West Virginia, Oklahoma, the teachers being frustrated at not getting their Prop 301 money for 10 years. I mean, all of these things have just sort of culminated now. And frankly, it does feel a little bit like the teacher movement is being hijacked, or at least there's an attempt to hijack it for political purposes. But putting that aside, the teachers
knock
have
us
a
over
really,
with a feather, Christine.
Yeah, I know that would never happen. But putting that aside, the teachers really do have a passion for this, and I have to disclaim: I happen to be married to a public school teacher, so we could benefit or not depending on the outcome of this. But this is something that is really tricky for a Republican who's in office and a conservative and one who's supported by pro-voucher, pro-school choice, pro-expansion forces, not just in Arizona, but all over the country. So he has to find a solution to get to this. And I really believe there is a solution. It will require spending more money on education.
Okay, Chad, before the break, final thoughts? Sir?
Well, I mean, one thing I would say, you know, there's a lot of good Arizona schools, both traditional district and charter schools, that are doing a lot of great work out here. And quite honestly, if I was Governor Ducey, he could be touting that message and really gaining a lot of steam on that if he just funded the things that need to be funded. And putting aside Republican or Democrat, these teachers deserve to be paid more, period. We're not anywhere comparable to our neighboring states. They need to be paid, and that needs to happen this year.
That's Chad Campbell. Also here is Christine Jones. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. More of the Friday Newscap after this. Happy Friday morning. It's the Friday Newscap in the midst of the show here on 91.5 in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein with Lauren Gilger. Also joining us are Christine Jones, former business executive and former congressional candidate, and former legislative leader Chad Campbell, senior vice president at Strategies 360. Christine, as our technology maven in the studio right now, I wanted to ask what your general thoughts were about the occurrence with Uber, the tragic death there, and then the governor deciding to cut off Uber at this point. No longer autonomous vehicles being tested in Arizona. Is it too little, too late? Does it make sense?
Well, the first thing you have to know about technology is it's wonderful when it works. And sometimes it doesn't. But you don't know that until you know. And so we've always had a notion with this administration that we were going to be open for business. We were going to peel back regulations. We were going to encourage innovation. All of those are good, noble things, and we should continue to do them. Could we have anticipated that somebody would have an unfortunate incident with a car? Probably. But that doesn't mean you should never do it, right? That just means maybe your test case has to be not with real-life humans and, you know, maybe not with real-life roads. The pulling the authority to test here was probably the right thing to do. Was it a little bit too far or too much? We don't know, right? What we do know is there is technology that seems like it's already been developed, that we don't have to reinvent, that avoids crashes with human beings and objects that go into the roadway. So if we can bring this back slowly or with openness and transparency, we ought to continue to let people test their innovations here, because why wouldn't we want to do that? Why wouldn't we want to lead as a state? Why wouldn't we want to say we're creating jobs and encouraging people to do new things?
Chad, is Uber the problem, or is the process around this the problem?
Probably both. So, I mean, you know, this highlights the classic argument about, you know, what is overregulation versus underregulation. You know, removing regulations when they're bureaucratic impediments is a good thing. Removing regulations that influence or help dictate public safety is a bad thing, and that's what happened here in my eyes. And, you know, had we had more stringent reporting requirements in Arizona, which was part of Ducey's sales pitch to these companies when they were kind of fleeing California, had we had more stringent reporting requirements, we probably would have been able to at least see ahead of time that Uber's technology is nowhere near Waymo, Google's technology. They're just not even in the same ballpark. Once we've learned this post-fact now, but had we had those reporting requirements, we would have known that ahead of time. And so the problem is the removal of the reporting and the regulation, and then I think Uber is cutting corners, basically, is my guess. I don't know.
Christine, was Governor Ducey too eager to make Arizona open for business and maybe even change the reputation of the state in some way?
No, not at all. We should be doing that. I would have done that. I mean, this is a wonderful place to land and invest and start a business and create jobs. It, you know, Arizona is one of the last great free states. So he did exactly the right thing. The question is, should we have known, and understanding we're looking at this now with a hindsight bias, should we have known that this was going to happen? Well, it's easy for us to sit here and judge this today, now that it's already happened. But let's don't cut off our nose to spite our face here, right? Let's don't overregulate this. Let's test and encourage innovation with openness and transparency. Again, public safety is important.
Again, but I would just add, I would argue we could have known this, I think, had we had the reporting requirements. And that is where the burden or the responsibility falls on Governor Ducey's shoulders right there.
So there was also this article this week that came out in The Guardian with the headline, "Exclusive: Arizona Governor and Uber Keep Self-Driving Program Secret, Emails Reveal." And this kind of kicked up a big stir here. The governor's office said it was ridiculous to say this was a secret. We all knew, right, that this was that the governor was excited about this technology. Howie Fisher, Capital Media Services, Ray, tweeted that he wrote an article in August 2016 saying that self-driving cars were already on the roads. So I talked to the reporter. His name is Mark Harris, a Guardian reporter who wrote this, and I asked him about it. He said basically that some of the emails that he reviewed from between Uber and the governor's office show that the Ducey administration was asked by Uber to kind of keep it quiet that they were testing self-driving cars. They had said at the time that they were only testing mapping cars on the road, is what this reporter said. Here's a little bit of what he said to me.
It's not that the whole idea of self-driving car was secret. Of course not. I mean, he has been a big proponent of it for years. But it was this particular instance when everyone, by all public statements from Uber or from Governor Ducey, the Uber cars on the streets were mapping cars, whereas in fact they were driving themselves.
So I think the question and what he's getting at here, whether or not people are going to agree about that and what he's saying there about the secret part, is there was clearly a cozy relationship between Uber and the governor's office. And was it too cozy? Is that what led to this?
Well, look, you want your governor to be affirmatively seeking relationships with people who run companies who may create jobs in the state. This is why Texas beat out most other states when Governor Perry was the governor. He actually got on a plane and went and met with these people and established relationships. It works really well. So let's don't discourage that. And, you know, if you read these emails, you can read a sinister tone into it, but you can do that with everything, right? You can't look at these things in a vacuum and say, oh, you know, Danny Seiden, who works for the governor, was cozying up to some woman who was in policy for Uber. Well, that's his job and that's her job. Okay, so let's not cast aspersions there. Again, I go back to, not to sound like a broken record, but if you have transparency and accountability, there's no reason not to do testing and encouraging innovation.
Well, when Chad, you mentioned regulation, though, is there enough? I guess there's always the balancing point,
there's
but is there enough transparency? There. Can transparency be voluntary?
Well, it can. I mean, it can be. Usually that doesn't work, though, both business and politics. But I mean, I would say this. The problem with those emails and what they illustrate is that we weren't having, as the public, we weren't having the full picture given to us. The extent of the testing was not being distributed or displayed to us. It would be like a pharmaceutical company saying they're testing a placebo drug on somebody, but they're actually giving them a real drug. Like, you got to be honest about how you're testing things. And this was testing in the public domain. It wasn't testing on some closed track. It wasn't testing in a theoretical computer simulation. It was testing in the public domain. And so the public deserved to know that. And yes, we all knew they were here. You know, Ducey announced that. But there was a lot of conversations going on behind the scenes that were not privy to the rest of us. And that is a very big problem in terms of public trust. And I think this is a bigger issue, putting aside the human tragedy, because that's horrible, but I think this is a very big issue for Governor Ducey politically, and I don't think they understand the extent of the issue right now.
That was my next question. So do you think there are political implications here? I mean, he's taken away Uber's right to test these cars on our roads right now. What do you think he could see, Christine?
Well, if it were just this one thing, it probably wouldn't be such a big deal, but we're sitting here at the apex of Theranos, the Uber death, Prop 301, Prop 123. I mean, we're sort of at the culmination of all these events by coincidence that happened at the same time. So I do think he has to be intentional and he has a decision to make about how he's going to proceed politically in when he announces that he's running again, which I guess he's going to do soon, because even though, despite your optimism, Chad, a Democrat's not going to win this race, it shouldn't even be a contest for an incumbent governor who's been doing a good job for the first 3 years and now has suddenly one bad month and we're going to throw him out.
Okay, guys, in our last couple of minutes, we had Eileen Klein at the top of the show, who's leaving as president of the Arizona Board of Regents. Now, Chad, she's someone who worked very closely with Governor Brewer, was her chief of staff for a while. She seems to have made the Board of Regents, I mean, we know about the Board of Regents, but not that president position. She seems to have made that a higher profile position, a one that is more significant. Does that job take on more or less significance with her leaving and with the current state and current condition of state funding for the universities?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I think it all depends on who replaces her. So I think Eileen did a great job over there. And I think they needed somebody to come in and kind of right the ship, not trying to disparage the Board of Regents, but I think they were directionless and for many, many years there. And she did a really good job of getting their house in order and really focusing on their mission. They need to find somebody like that again. I don't know who that person is necessarily. Maybe Christine, maybe you can apply for the job. I don't know.
Where do I send my resume?
But, I mean, she did a good job. So it depends on who they replace her with. Does it stay as high profile or as powerful? I'm not sure. That's a real, it's like a chicken and egg type of question. I just don't know.
Yeah. Christine, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't disagree. First of all, I have an immense amount of respect for Eileen Klein. Once in a while, I say thank God for her and people like Michael Crow and people who have been transformational in education in Arizona. The high profile or low profile, I think, depends specifically on the individual. Mm-hmm. Now, she's put the board in a place where it sort of could operate on its own just by centrifugal force for the next number of years. But she is highly respected by the board members. I know several of them personally, and it's going to be a big, big hole for them to lose her.
Well, and finally, and Eileen, when we had her on, wouldn't say this, of course, but Representative Mark Finchem has been pushing this bill forward and trying to break up the Board of Regents. Mm-hmm. And so some of us who are conspiracy theorists thought, oh, maybe there's a concern that actually will advance that the governor might actually sign it. Do either of you have any vibe on that?
My sense is talking to legislators that it doesn't have enough support, but, you know, well, that's just reading tea leaves and talking to a few people on each side of the aisle to see where they think that thing is going.
I would agree. And I actually think years ago that maybe would have had some support, but I think Eileen's done a good job over there and actually mitigated any support that would have had. That's my guess.
Former legislative leader Chad Campbell, also senior vice president at Strategies 360, and former business executive, former congressional candidate Christine Jones. Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Happy Easter.
And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.